Welcome back, Deep Divers. Today, we're going deep with Dr. John Oswald.
Oh, yeah, he's a great pick.
He's got this lecture on Exodus.
Exodus, okay.
Specifically chapters 12 through 14.
The Passover and all that.
Exactly. Passover, the Red Sea crossing.
Big stuff.
Huge. We're talking epic miracles, tricky theological questions.
Always a good combo.
Right. But Oswald doesn't just tell the stories, he makes us think.
Like, so what? So what does this stuff mean, like, thousands of years later?
Totally. So that's what we're going to unpack.
Sounds good. I'm ready.
Okay, so right away, Oswald dives into the Passover regulations. He's really interested in this part about foreigners wanting to join the Exodus. It's Exodus 12.43 onward, if you're following along at home. What's fascinating is that God's covenant, it wasn't just about, like, being ethnically Hebrew.
Yeah, and that's a big deal, right? Back then, most folks believed your gods were tied to your land, your people.
It's like your national ID card got you into the right temple.
Exactly. But here's God saying, nope, it's not about bloodlines. Oswald argues it's about accepting the covenant's obligations, symbolized by circumcision.
But doesn't that create, like, a contradiction with the whole chosen people thing?
Yeah, it's a good question. But then Oswald brings up Isaiah 56.
Isaiah, that's a whole other book.
I know, right?
Okay.
But it shows this idea developing. God promises foreigners a place in his temple. Their offerings would be accepted.
Wait, so anyone could just convert?
As long as they bind themselves to him, yeah. Oswald makes a point that it's not about replacing Israel, but expanding the circle.
Okay, I'm starting to see the nuance here.
And centuries later, Paul picks up on this. He says the real children of Abraham are defined by faith, not just who your grandpa was.
That totally flips the script on who's in and who's out.
Big time.
That.
So that's the question for us today, I think. What does this expanding circle of inclusion tell us about God's heart? Not just back then, but for all people, always.
Wow, yeah. That's a good one to chew on.
It is. It makes you wonder if maybe God's always been more about drawing people in rather than kicking them out.
Interesting. Okay, so Oswald then shifts gears a little bit. He starts talking about the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the whole idea of, like, consecrating the firstborn.
Okay, firstborn, right. A lot of cultures have stuff about that.
Yeah, exactly. And Oswald makes this point. It's easy to forget the why behind these rituals, to just go through the motions. You know.
Lose the meaning.
Yeah.
Just kind of doing stuff because you're supposed to.
Right. And he contrasts the way the Hebrews celebrated deliverance with, like, pagan New Year celebrations happening at the same time.
Ah, so both involve the firstborn, but totally different vibe.
Exactly. Like, the Hebrews, they're remembering freedom from slavery, a real event, you know? But the pagans, they're reenacting myths.
One's grounded, one's kind of floaty.
Right. Like, two groups doing the same basic thing, but with totally different meanings behind it.
That's a good point. It made me think of the Feast of Tabernacles, too.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Well, think about it. Pagans are partying it up for Bacchus,
yeah.
Right? Indulgence, all that. But at the same time, the Hebrews are reflecting on their sins. Unintentional sins, specifically.
So, same time of year, but totally different focus. One group is all about letting loose. The other is about taking stock, seeking forgiveness.
Makes you think, right?
It does. And it leads to a pretty big question. Should we care about the historical grounding of our faith?
Yeah. Is it just trivia? Or does it actually impact how we live, what we believe?
And Oswald gets pretty serious about this. He says if the Bible's accounts aren't historically accurate, then faith is meaningless, like pointless.
He's not mincing words.
Nope. And he uses the resurrection as an example. He says, if Jesus didn't actually rise from the dead,
then Christianity is a bust. A nice story, but that's it.
Exactly. It's like building a house on sand. No foundation.
Whoa. And he even tells a story about another scholar, Jerry Walls, I think.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of him.
So Walls asks his students this crazy thought experiment. Imagine there's undeniable proof that the resurrection didn't happen.
Oof. Tough one.
Right. And get this. A lot of the students still said they were Christians.
Really? But what are they holding on to then? If the core event isn't true.
That's the million-dollar question, right? Mm-hmm. What does make faith real?
So, to bring it back to us, how does knowing the Exodus story or any biblical event really being grounded in history, how does that affect your faith? Does it make it more real or not really?
I think for me it's like, well, knowing something's true, it changes how you relate to it.
Okay, I can see that.
Like, if Exodus is just a nice story, then yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
But if it really happened, then that God, that power, it's real too.
That's a good point.
And now, here's where it gets even wilder. God's leadership during the Exodus wasn't always what you'd expect.
How so?
Well, Oswald points out that God didn't take the Israelites on the most direct route to Canaan.
You mean like he took a detour?
More like he took the scenic route, the long way around. You know, the quick trip through Philistine territory, that 11-day journey everyone always talks about.
Yeah.
God's like, nope, not doing that.
But why? Why take the long way?
Because he knew they weren't ready for war.
The Israelites.
Think about it. They just escaped slavery. Their trust in God. It was shaky at best.
Okay, yeah. Fresh out of Egypt, still got that slave mentality.
Exactly. Oswald says encountering the Philistines that early on could have shattered their faith sent them running right back to Pharaoh.
So instead, God takes them the long way to the Red Sea.
Exactly.
But why there?
He needed them to experience his power, that undeniable, can't-explain-it-away power. The Red Sea crossing wasn't just about getting to the other side. It was about building their faith.
So it's like God saying, look what I can do. Trust me, even when things get tough.
Exactly. Now, have you ever had that in your own life?
Yeah.
Where what seems like a detour or a wrong turn turns out to be way better in the long run?
You know what? I think I have. But it's hard to see it that way when you're in the middle of it.
Totally. Hindsight.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got this long way around. We're headed to the Red Sea. But there's a twist, right?
Oh, yeah. There's always a twist with Oswald. This one's about the location. He goes deep into the text, and he says, the Hebrew doesn't actually say Red Sea. It says Reed Sea.
Wait, the Reed Sea? Is that a real place?
It was. But it's not the vast ocean with towering cliffs that we usually picture. Think more like a region of lakes.
Lakes? Really?
Yeah. Probably the Bitter Lakes. They were tidal and salty, but way shallower than the Red Sea.
So the location might be different, but the miracle, the parting of the waters, that's still mind-blowing.
Exactly. And Oswald's not diminishing the miracle at all. He's just pushing us to look beyond the Hollywood version, you know?
Yeah, like those epic movies with the waves crashing down.
Totally. But it still took God's intervention to make it happen. Natural laws had to be suspended.
It's like he's saying, don't get hung up on the geography. Focus on the God who can do the impossible.
Right on. And, you know, speaking of God doing the unexpected, Oswald suggests that by leading the Israelites towards this Reed Sea, he was setting something else in motion.
What do you mean?
He put Pharaoh in a position to choose. Remember, God doesn't tempt us to do evil.
Right. But he does allow for free will even when it leads to bad choices.
Exactly. God created a scenario where Pharaoh's free will could play out with real consequences.
So it's like the Reed Sea wasn't just a place on a map.
It was a test.
A test of Pharaoh's heart. A chance for him to choose obedience over stubbornness.
It's a powerful way to look at it.
It really is. Okay, now let's talk numbers. How many Israelites actually crossed that sea?
Ah, yes, the big question. That number, 600,000 fighting men, potentially means 2.5 million people total.
Which creates some logistical problems, to put it mildly.
To say the least, how do you even fit that many people on a beach, let alone move them across a body of water? And remember, this is before Instagram. Nobody's organizing carpools.
Right. No Google Maps, no crowd control barriers. It's wild.
Totally. But here's the thing. Hebrew numbers, they often represent quality as well as quantity. We get stuck on the precise number, but maybe that's not the point.
Okay, so how does Oswald deal with these seemingly impossible numbers?
Well, he has a couple of ideas. One is that the word translated as thousand could also mean troop, like a smaller military unit.
So instead of thousands upon thousands of individual people, it's more like companies, battalions.
Exactly. Which would mean the Exodus might have been a smaller, more intimate group than we picture. And that's interesting, right? It highlights the personal nature of God's deliverance.
Instead of this massive, faceless crowd, it's about individuals, families, all experiencing this miracle up close.
Precisely. Another possibility is that the total number, including everyone, was actually 600,000. Still a lot of people, but more manageable than 2.5 million.
Either way, it reminds us that interpreting the Bible requires more than just reading it through our modern lens.
We got to get into their world, their way of thinking.
Exactly. It's about digging deeper, looking for nuances of language, culture, all of that.
And speaking of digging deeper, there's this one detail Oswald highlights that I just love. He talks about the timing of God's intervention at the Red Sea.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. It wasn't some midday power move. It was
the last watch of the night.
The darkest hour.
The most discouraging time.
Why wait until then? Was it just for the drama? Like God saying, hold my beer, watch this.
It's deeper than that. Oswald says God often works most powerfully when we feel the most helpless.
When we've hit rock bottom.
Yeah, like we're totally spent. no options left.
I think we can all relate to that, right?
Yeah.
When things are really bad, that's when we finally let go and let God take over.
It's like the saying, let go and let God, right?
Yeah.
It's when our own strength fails that we're truly open to his strength.
That makes sense.
And this whole thing about timing, it reminded me of something else Oswald talks about. He contrasts the Israelites' initial excitement when they first hear God's promises with their despair and complaining when they actually face hardship.
Oh, yeah. Like their faith had an expiration date.
Right. It seems like their faith was conditional, dependent on good circumstances, not rooted in God's unchanging character.
It's so human, isn't it? We trust when things are easy, but the moment things get tough,
we start to question.
We doubt. We blame.
It's like we forget everything God's already done for us.
It's so true. So how do we break out of that cycle? How do we develop a faith that's not swayed by circumstances?
Good question. And Oswald, he offers a thought-provoking suggestion. Maybe, just maybe, the Israelites' faith was strongest at the Red Sea, precisely because they had no other options. They were trapped, no escape routes.
Wow. So their desperation actually made their faith stronger.
It's counterintuitive, right? Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, it makes sense. When we have too many options, too many resources, it's easy to forget about God.
Yeah.
We become self-sufficient. We try to solve everything ourselves.
And then we wonder why we don't experience God's power in a big way.
Exactly. We build our own little kingdoms, our own safety nets. But when those safety nets get ripped away, that's when we're truly open to God.
So the question is, how do we cultivate that kind of radical dependence on God, not just in moments of crisis, but all the time?
Yeah. How do we learn to lean on him, even when we do have other options? Knowing that his way is always better, it's not easy. But Oswald challenges us to examine our own hearts, to ask, where are we placing our trust?
Are we trying to control everything, or are we surrendering to God?
Even when it feels scary or uncomfortable.
It's a call to move beyond a faith that's just convenient, you know, to embrace a faith that can handle the storms.
And that's the kind of faith we see in the Exodus, this story of a broken people rescued by God, led on a crazy journey of transformation.
A journey that honestly kind of mirrors our own.
Right.
We've got our own Red Seas to cross, our own wildernesses to wander through. But the good news is we're not alone.
We've got the same God, the same power working in us and through us.
And that's a powerful truth to hold on to.
It is. So where do we go from here?
Well, I think Oswald leaves us with some pretty big questions to ponder. Like, how do we live out this radical, unshakable faith in our everyday lives?
How do we trust God even when it feels like he's taking us the wrong way?
What does it look like to surrender our plans, our desires, and truly embrace his plan for our lives?
Those are good questions to sit with.
They are. And they're questions that can lead to some really amazing adventure.
An adventure's worth taking.
Absolutely. Because on the other side of that fear, that doubt, that seemingly impossible obstacle, there's a God who's waiting to do something incredible.
Something beyond anything we can ask or imagine.
And that, my friends, is worth diving deep for.
It's a crazy story, right? All this buildup, all these miracles, and then
what happens?
The Israelites, they freak out.
No way, after all that.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Here they are, trapped between the sea and this charging Egyptian army, and they forget everything.
They forget the plagues, the power of God.
Gone. All they can see is this impossible situation.
Oh, man, I can relate to that tunnel vision, right? When fear takes over.
Totally.
Yeah.
And instead of turning to God, they turn on Moses.
Yeah.
Blaming him for everything.
Ouch. That's harsh.
Yeah. They're basically saying, you got us into this mess.
It makes you think, doesn't it? How fear can hijack even the strongest faith. You see this amazing miracle, then bam, 5 minutes later, you're back to doubting.
It's like our default setting is worry.
Right. It's easier to complain than to trust.
But here's where it gets interesting. Moses. He doesn't crumble.
Really? Faced with, like, certain death.
He stands firm.
Mm.
And he tells the people, don't be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again.
Wow. Where does he get that kind of confidence? Was God whispering in his ear, giving him a play-by-play of the sea parting?
Actually, no. Oswald points out that at this point, God hadn't given Moses specific instructions.
So he's just swinging it.
In a way, yeah. His confidence wasn't based on knowing the plan. It was based on knowing God.
Okay, I can see that. It's like he'd spent so long experiencing God's faithfulness that he just knew, even when it didn't make sense.
Exactly. Years of seeing God come through, it had built this unshakable trust.
And that trust allowed him to lead, even when everyone else was panicking.
Powerful stuff, right? Makes you wonder, what would it look like for us to have that kind of confidence, not just in good times, but when everything's falling apart?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's easy to trust when things are going your way, but when you're staring down an army.
Or your own personal Red Sea, right?
Exactly. What does it look like to stand firm then? To trust God even when it feels impossible?
It's a challenge. But that's what faith is, isn't it? It's trusting God even when you don't understand.
Okay, so we've got the Red Sea crossing, this amazing display of God's power. But Oswald goes deeper. He starts talking about how God gains glory through our lives.
Ah, yes. It's not just about big miracles, is it?
Right. In Exodus, it's pretty obvious. You defeat Pharaoh, you part the sea. That's a pretty good PR move for God.
Front page news, for sure.
But Oswald challenges us to think about how God might be glorified in less spectacular ways.
In the everyday stuff.
Exactly. He uses the example of this Christian t-shirt company. They're out there boldly sharing the gospel in a pretty secular world.
And they're making a difference.
Right. And it's not flashy. It's not a sea parting, but it's still powerful.
It's a reminder that God can work through anything, even t-shirts.
It's like whatever you're doing, if you're doing it with a heart that reflects God, that can bring him glory.
Love that. Small choices, big impact.
Okay, so back to the Exodus. We've talked about the miracle, the leadership, but there's one tiny detail that Oswald points out that I find fascinating. It's about the timing of the crossing.
The timing.
Yeah, remember, it doesn't happen in the middle of the day. It happens during the last watch of the night.
The darkest hour, right?
Exactly. The most discouraging, hopeless time.
And why do you think God waited until then?
Well, I used to think it was just about the drama, you know? Like, God likes to make an entrance, but Oswald suggests something different.
Oh, what's that?
He says God often works most powerfully when we feel the most hopeless.
Hmm. When we're at our weakest.
Exactly. When hope feels like a distant memory, it's in those dark moments when we finally let go of our own striving.
That we're truly open to God's power.
It's like we have to empty ourselves before he can fill us up.
There's something to that. It reminds me of how the Israelites responded to all this. They were so quick to go from excitement to despair.
Oh, yeah. It's like their faith had a short shelf life.
Right. One minute they're praising God, the next they're complaining.
And it makes you wonder, how do we develop a faith that's not so easily shaken? A faith that's not dependent on good circumstances?
A faith that's rooted in something deeper.
Oswald has this really interesting idea about that. He says, maybe, just maybe, the Israelites' faith was strongest at the Red Sea because they had no other options.
They were trapped. Nowhere to turn but to God.
Exactly. And it's counterintuitive, but it makes sense. When we have too many options, too many resources, it's easy to forget about God.
We become self-reliant. We think we can handle it all on our own.
And we miss out on his power.
So the challenge for us is, how do we cultivate that kind of radical dependence on God? Not just when we're desperate, but all the time.
How do we trust him even when we have other choices? Even when his way doesn't make sense to us?
It's not easy. But that's the kind of faith that can move mountains. It really is a challenge, isn't it? To surrender control, to trust God, even when we don't get it.
But that's the beauty of it, right? It's not about us figuring it all out. It's about surrendering to a God who knows way more than we do.
And who loves us way more than we can imagine.
That's the thing that always gets me. The Israelites, they messed up so much. They doubted, they complained, they basically forgot everything God had done for them. But even in their weakness,
God remained faithful.
Always. He never gave up on them.
And that's the message that resonates with me the most, you know. Thousands of years later, we're still just as messed up. We still doubt. We still fear. We still try to take matters into our own hands.
But God's still there.
Patient, loving, inviting us to trust him.
It's like he's always whispering, let go. I gotcha.
And that brings us back to Oswald's big question, doesn't it? Would we trust God, even if it meant taking what seems like the wrong way?
The harder path. The one that doesn't make sense.
What might that look like in your life right now? What Red Sea is God calling you to step into?
What impossible situation is he inviting you to trust him with?
Because sometimes those detours, those challenges, they're the very things that lead us to deeper faith.
That push us to rely on God in a way we never have before.
And that's where the real adventure begins.
So before we wrap things up, let's recap what we've learned from Dr. Oswald.
Sounds good.
First off, God's covenant, it's not limited by ethnicity. It's open to anyone who accepts it. That's radical. Even today, we struggle with that.
It's a good reminder to check our own hearts, you know? Are we creating barriers where God wants to build bridges?
Good point.
Oh.
Okay, another big takeaway. We got to know the why behind our faith.
We can't just go through the motions. We need to understand the history, the meaning, the truth that makes it all matter.
Then there's the whole Reed Sea thing. The location may be different than we thought, but the miracle is still real. God parted the waters. He did the impossible. And that's what matters.
Right. It's about focusing on God's power, not getting hung up on the details.
And we talked about how God's guidance isn't always easy or obvious. Sometimes he takes us the long way around, but he's always got a purpose.
He's always working to strengthen our faith, to prepare us for something bigger.
And finally, that big question. How do we build an unshakable faith? Oswald suggests that maybe it's in those moments of desperation when we have no other choice but to trust God. That's when our faith really grows.
It's counterintuitive, but it's true. When we let go of control, when we surrender to God.
That's when we experience his power in a whole new way.
So as we wrap up our deep dive today, I want to leave you with this. What Red Sea are you facing? What impossible situation is God inviting you to trust him with?
It might be scary. It might not make sense. But I promise you, on the other side of that fear, that doubt, there's a God who's waiting to do something amazing.
Thanks for joining us today.
We'll see you next time for another deep dive into God's Word.